Welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Brian London. He is the editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference, which I will post a link to both of those resources below this interview. Brian, first comment comes regarding the gold price. And now that it seems like we have those geopolitical issues between Iran and the U.S. more or less behind us, we can reflect on how these issues did drive the gold price in the very short term, which tends to happen. But I think coming out the back end, there is one key aspect to note, and that is, yes, the gold price popped and faded pretty quickly, but it seems to, at least right now, be setting up a higher trading range. That all depends if gold can maybe bounce for the rest of this week or at least the next couple trading days and more solidify this recent lower level that it went down to. But again, it's a higher trading range than even before these geopolitical events started. Please take us through kind of a recap of how you found gold to trade and how we're coming out the back end right now from geopolitics.
Corey, you're exactly correct. You know, when we had the missiles start flying, I came out immediately, got an alert out to our subscribers saying this is no reason to buy gold. It's actually temporarily derailing the gold rally that we had been enjoying. You know, I had been predicting, and actually since December of 2015, a late December rally in gold, and it's happened every year since. So I predicted that again this year, and we started in late December. We gained like 4% in the gold price in December alone. First day or two of January, the rally was continuing. Then the missiles flew, and we had the conflict of Iran, and the gold price popped over $1,600 very quickly. Now, again, that I came out and told our readers that's not a reason to buy gold. It's when things calm down, there's the risk that that the price will go right back down or even further down, and people will confuse the reasons for gold's rally. Gold was moving because of the monetary issues, because the Federal Reserve was back into quantitative easing, and that's a very valid long-term driver for the gold market that I think will take gold to $1,600 this year. So if people start believing that it's all geopolitical, that has, again, the risk of kind of temporarily derailing that. What's encouraging to me is the fact that all of that has calmed down as we predicted, and gold has settled back from its peaks as we predicted, but it hasn't given up all of the gains that it made on those geopolitical issues. So that tells me that those monetary issues, the kind of things we really want to see driving the gold price, are still in play, and we've actually gained after all of these episodes. We've actually have made progress on the gold price. It remains to be seen. Maybe we're going to give up that $20 or $25 that we net gained from that episode. But right now it looks good. Gold price is leveling off. It's gaining a little bit as we speak. And I think that the long-term trends are going to be positive. You know, we're having the trade deal of China signed today. And for the longest time, that was a real negative, a bearish thing for gold. Whenever there was progress made, gold price would get hit. And I thought that if we ever came up with a real deal with China, that gold would take a really large hit, would lose $50 to $100. We're gaining on the day as they're signing the deal, and the dollar is losing. So that's flip-flopped again in gold's favor. So I think the sentiment is really positive for gold right now and for good, you know, long-term reasons.
Yeah, I'm with you in terms of the longer-term outlook for gold. And on the back of this China trade deal, we're getting some details on it. And you know what? We still have a general trade war going on with China. This is just the phase one deal. but it is showing at least a little bit of progress. It'll be interesting to see as people get to actually dive into some of the finer details here. Let's also talk about some of the stocks, though, but let's talk kind of conceptually when it comes to, say, a stock that you hold or a stock that you're watching, and the company comes out with good news, whether it's drill results, well, mostly on the back of drill results, because it seems like this market, if you see good drill results, that can push the stock higher. But what's your takeaway from some of these stocks that still seem to be largely ignored? And even if they come out with good drill results and the stock isn't popping on the back of those, how do you play that stock then? What is your takeaway?
Well, I don't necessarily play the stock. I don't think that that's a piece of information, that's a piece of evidence, but I don't think it's definitive in and of itself. I think what that says is, well, this is something I need to look into. There's usually an instance where the market or the insiders, somebody knows something that you don't know just from looking at the headlines. You know, that it may be great drill results, but it may be a 10-meter step out from previous results. It doesn't really mean that much. There may be other issues involved. If you look at the other drill results, the other results from that news release, they may not be that good. There may be a lot of a structural problem with the share structure, that there might be a lot of loose stock out there that might represent an opportunity. So you need to look into it. What it basically says is dig in and find out if the market's right, in your opinion, using your experience. The good thing about this market, junior mining stocks, is that it really isn't that efficient. There are inefficiencies that you can take advantage of. And if you find those opportunities, you can jump on them. But really what that tells me is this is something that needs to be investigated further. And frankly, even if the stock price does react to the news, if it's good news, you still need to look into it, because the company may still be undervalued even after a big response to positive results.
And I think it's also telling us just what this market is truly like right now, where people still aren't feeling that rushed into getting into at least some of these stocks. There's definitely these high-flying stocks that continue higher, but yeah, you don't need to feel like you are chasing something right now, because the market is still very much taking its time getting into some of these new stories. Let's also talk about this other trend and why it all comes down to Eric Sprott, who has very much been supporting a lot of the silver stocks over the last about 6 months now, maybe even a year. And he has injected a lot of money into the system. It's looking, at least right now, like very good timing for him. But one thing that I found interesting is that on the back of a lot of his investments, there were these followers that did feel like they needed to invest with Eric. And after something was announced of his investment, then they would, or the retail audience would, move that stock further higher. What's your takeaway from how much Eric has supported the market and also that following that he has garnered on the back of a lot of large investments?
You know, if I was a junior company and Eric invested $2 or $3 million or more in my company, then I would shout that from the rooftops as well. I just don't think it means that much at the end of the day these days to a company's market cap. There's not that instant market reaction like it was when Eric started this buying spree. You know, if he would have only bought two stocks or invested in two companies over the last 18 months, then I think that would be a tremendous validation for those two companies. But now when you're talking, you know, maybe 20 companies, I think that effect is mitigated somewhat. That said, Eric is a avowed silver and gold bug, and I completely appreciate and agree with his view on the metals. And I know why he's making these big, big plays, and I agree with his views in almost every instance on the companies he's buying. You know, that they kind of fall in two different buckets. One would be just really high-powered, high-potential exploration plays, companies that could make world-class discoveries. And that's kind of the gambler motivation. That's kind of the excitement of discovery that I think we all share in this in investing in this industry. The other bucket, as it were, are companies that have or are producing, developing, discovering very large resources. So those are more optionality plays where you can buy a lot of metal, gold or silver, in the ground. You know, you don't see Eric buying copper or zinc plays. They're gold, silver plays that have the potential to produce very large resources or have those large resources. And those optionality plays are something that a lot of people, a lot of geologists that we know don't like, because there's no economics often with these plays. But from the stance, from the viewpoint of a gold bug or a silver bug, that's what you really like, because these companies can really, really move when or as the gold and silver prices rise. And so you're buying a lot of metal in the ground that for pennies on the dollar. And that's the appeal to Eric and other gold and silver bugs of those kinds of plays.
And Eric also has the ability to take these multiple shots. However, one thing that I have noticed recently is some of the investments that he's been putting in, if they aren't of, let's say, large amount of money, maybe only a couple million dollars, then they're not getting that same sort of benefit that companies did when he would put in a couple million or even, let's say, tens of millions of dollars into these companies. Do you think that the market is just running out of money to follow these stocks? What is your takeaway?
Well, I think it's size appropriate. You know, some of these companies he's putting $2 million in, that's 10 million or 10% of their market cap. He really can't do much more than that. And for those companies, and I think that the size of his investment is kind of appropriate to where the company is and its market valuation. The good thing about these investments, you know, and not to dismiss them too much out of hand, the good thing about these investments is that it's a great chunk of money for these juniors. It solidifies the company. It funds their exploration programs. And Eric's a long-term investor. He's not a trader. You know, he could literally, he's buying so much of these companies on a percentage basis, he can't practically get out of his investment. He's playing it for the ultimate win. And, you know, and he doesn't need the money from a 20% gain on the stock. So he's going to be in these things, you assume, for the long term. And it provides money, and it takes a lot of stock off the market for a long time. So structurally and fundamentally, it's a wonderful thing for these companies. And it ticks another box for an investor who is, you know, evaluating these plays.
All right, Brian, before we wrap it up, any stocks that you're liking right now that you would care to share with our audience, please?
That's interesting. There's a number of companies. Somebody was asking me about this a while back. What are your top plays for this year? And I think back on some of the ones we recommended last year and the year before that have just, you know, skyrocketed, like Great Bear, Aftermath Silver, New Pacific, and you know, I'm still trying to figure out those companies, those plays, and I haven't come up with a real definitive list for 2020 that of just the top plays I like. But with that said, I like Millrock. I like their exploration program that's coming up. I like the value of Revival Gold, the management team, the amount of gold, the size of the resource that they have in the ground compared to their market cap, and the fact that they're coming up with a resource update soon. I like Libero Copper and Gold. I think that they missed a window with the weather to get some drilling done on some exciting Golden Triangle targets. Barely missed the window to get the drilling done, and so that play kind of it really took a downturn with the traders dumping the stock in the fall. And I think that's all going to ramp up again when we get back into the expiration season in the late spring, early summer. So if you want to look 6 to 8 months out, I think Libero is a great bargain at the current levels. I own Millrock and I own Libero. I don't yet own Revival. I'm looking to pick that one up personally.
Right. Thank you for those insights, Brian. Very interesting chatting with you. I look forward to catching up with you in Vancouver over this weekend. Have a safe flight in here. Just snowed a lot, so I hope everything runs on schedule for you. And we will get to catch up this weekend. Thanks for your time, Brian.
I appreciate it, Corey. See you soon.